Today on Vox Talks Economics, the optimal way to fix the electoral map. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week, we're bringing you the best new research in economics. So remember, subscribe. Follow us on Instagram as well. You'll find us at Vox Talks Economics. Gerrymandering means redrawing the electoral map for your side's advantage. In the US at the moment, a lot of political activity appears to be increasingly partisan. So is this also true of redistricting? And if there's evidence that this is happening, what would be the optimal strategy to achieve a party political advantage? Alison Stashko of Emory University is one of the authors of a new discussion paper on gerrymandering in the US, and she joins me now. Alison, welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Thank you so much, Tim.
I suppose this might be a pretty obvious question, but why do political parties attempt to gerrymander?
The fairly obvious answer is that if you draw the map, you can affect the number of seats that you expect to win in the legislature in the upcoming election. So more seats is more power. A lot of parties have the freedom and flexibility to choose a map that is best for them. And so it's definitely something which is in their interest to do where they have the ability to do it.
Many people, non-Americans, might be surprised to learn that redistricting in the US is done by the political parties. How on earth does a process like this work?
That's right. So in most other places, this is not how it works. It's usually delegated to, say, an independent commission. But most states in the US, so 39 of the 50 states, have elected lawmakers drawing the maps for the US Congress and also for their state legislatures. And it works pretty much the same way as any other lawmaking works in those states. So a committee inside of the legislature will propose a map. That map then goes up for a vote in both houses of the legislature, and the governor can approve it or veto it. So there could be some back or forth. Mm-hmm. But if a party controls the legislature and the governor is also aligned with that party, then they really have a lot of opportunity to gerrymander and to win more seats.
Does this work? I mean, historically, do we know that gerrymandering has made a difference in the outcomes of elections or difference in which policies are implemented afterwards?
It certainly seems that gerrymandering matters, and that's why a lot of Americans are aware of this and even report that this is an important issue for democracy in the US. But when it comes down to it, it can also be difficult to tease out exactly which seat was won only because of gerrymandering and which policy was enacted only because of gerrymandering and so on. But what we can say is, you know, there have been some extreme examples, and also the ability to gerrymander seems easier now. We have lots of data readily available. We have lots of nifty redistricting software packages that allow you to kind of tinker and find out what map would be best for your party. And so you see things like parties winning, say, 70% of the seats, even though they only won 50% of the votes in some important swing states in recent elections. So that seems to really indicate that gerrymandering is having an effect on its main target, which is the number of seats won. And then you can do more fancy analysis. So there's a team, for instance, the ALARM project at Harvard, and they looked at the most recent redistricting wave after the 2020 census. And they see that lots of states were able to win more seats by comparing maps to computer-drawn maps. So you simulate thousands of maps. And that way you can see, okay, was the map that was drawn really an outlier in terms of the number of seats that Republicans or Democrats expect to win? So that's another good way to see that, yes, parties seem to eke out a couple of seats in some important swing states just by redrawing the map. The next question is, all right, you can win more seats, but what does it matter for policymaking? Mm-hmm. So there has been some interesting work, especially in political science, that shows that if you redraw the map, as you might expect, it affects the types of candidates that run for districts because the composition of a district might be, say, more or less extreme. It affects the way that they vote once in office. And there's even some evidence that downstream policies reflect the fact that a district was gerrymandered and so on.
This is one of those things that once you start to think about it, you think, oh my, this really is extremely important. And it sort of seems like cheating. You said the public is aware of it. This isn't a secret strategy. Do they object to it in the US?
There are plenty of objections. Maybe you can imagine that the side that's most mad about the map is the side that didn't get to draw it. So you have that issue. But you could say that there's bipartisan support for making this process more transparent and more aligned with what voters want.
And we know gerrymandering undermines accountable government, and we are gathered here to make...
So there's this refrain that voters should choose their politicians and not the other way around. It's definitely seen as a negative practice. Nobody proudly announces that their committee has drawn the best gerrymandered map. They come out and say, oh, we've drawn the most fair map. It's great for our states, and we're really proud of it. But everyone kind of knows the name of the game.
In July 2023, we interviewed Julia Cajet about the strategies that rich people use to influence the political debate. Listen again to our episode called Political Inequality. We also spoke to Julia in April 2020 about her research into campaign finance. That episode is called The Price of a Vote.
Okay, so you have considered in this work what an optimal gerrymandering strategy could be in different conditions. I want to understand that. So imagine I want to gerrymander and I've come to you because, well, you're an expert on this now. So first of all, if everyone votes in my district and I was a gerrymanderer and I wanted to do it, how would I redraw the boundaries?
Yeah, very good. So first, just one thing is that when we say the optimal map, we specifically mean for a gerrymanderer. And there's all sorts of interesting questions we might come to about what's optimal for the people and the voters. But if you are optimally drawing a map for one political party to win as many seats as possible, there's a fairly intuitive strategy, I would say it's even like conventional wisdom, that the way to do it is to pack and crack your voters. So that means that you're going to take some of your opponents and pack them into districts that they'll almost surely win. Mm-hmm. And that's actually diluting their voting power, because what you can do is spread the remaining voters across districts that your party will win by a relatively narrow margin. So you can see the strategy has this flavor of using your voters fairly efficiently to win lots and lots of seats and wasting your opponent's votes.
But of course, different places vote at different rates, whatever their political affiliation, don't they? So if not everyone turns out to vote, how does that change my optimal strategy if I wanted to gerrymander in places where my party has a high turnout?
The fact is that districts have to be equal in the total population size. But if you're, say, Democrats and Republicans are voting at different rates, then you might want to incorporate that into the strategy. So, for example, suppose you have voters that are tending to support your party and they turn out at a much higher rate than your opponents. Mm-hmm. Well, then maybe you wanted to win a district by just, say, like 51% to win that district in a really efficient way. But now, because of your high turnout rate advantage, you don't need 51% of the population on your side. You can win that district with that high vote share with, say, only 40% of the population, because in the polls, they outnumber your opponents. So that's one way which you can change the map. You can kind of spread your voters more thinly where they have a turnout advantage.
And I suppose something similar can happen in places where my voters are less likely to turn out. What do I do there?
Yeah, exactly. So on the flip side, if your voters have a turnout disadvantage, so they're less likely to turn out at the polls. And by the way, this could be for any number of reasons. Like, it might be because voting is costly and they don't have time to do it, but also kids can vote. You have to be a citizen to vote. So there's all sorts of reasons for this variation why you might have an area of a state where your supporters are relatively less likely to vote. So in those regions, what can you do? Well, the worst thing would be to pair them with a higher turnout opponent, because then they're outnumbered on election day. And so indeed, you want to separate them or isolate them away from opponents. And the thing that we found surprising as we dug into this with a theoretical model is that you might even kind of push this logic to the extreme. So you might actually find it optimal as a partisan gerrymanderer to isolate your voters into safe districts. And again, that's if their turnout rates are so low that mixing them in with opponents would only dilute their vote.
You mentioned there was redistricting software available now. If I want to gerrymander, do I have the data available that I would need to perform this kind of analysis?
You do. All of this data is publicly available. It might be that in practice, there's fancy for-purchase data that includes some estimation and modeling. But the raw data that you need to gerrymander is population counts. So that comes from the census and is available to the public. And then if you want to be a partisan gerrymanderer, you can also collect information about how people have voted in the past. So what were the turnout rates in recent elections? Mm-hmm. What were the vote shares? And you can get this information at a pretty granular level, like at a level of an election precinct in the US. And then part of the benefit of this redistricting software, so on the one hand, it makes gerrymandering easier, but on the other hand, it's also been released to the public. So citizens can propose a map by finding these software online and you can add whatever data you want. So it's easy for someone to gerrymander. The data and software are available to all sides, I guess.
I was looking some of this up after I read your paper, and there has been some redistricting that has created some weird voting constituencies, hasn't there, in recent years. Now, you have this model of what the optimal strategy would be if you were a partisan gerrymanderer. How can you test your model to discover whether the political parties are trying to redraw the electoral map in the optimal way?
Because it's so well known that there's variation in the rates at which Democrat-leaning and Republican-leaning areas of a state turn out, mm-hmm. that this was actually quite a salient feature of the problem and that gerrymanderers were probably already incorporating these strategies. So that is to say, we didn't think we were reinventing gerrymandering. We wanted to know if we could find the hallmarks of these strategies in the data. One prediction that we can look for in the data is that there should be a systematic relationship between the turnout rate, say, of a precinct and the type of district that it's assigned to. Mm-hmm. And so in particular, if you think of those two examples we had, one example is if you have high turnout supporters, you're going to put them into competitive districts up against, say, some relatively less high turnout opponents, but they're still going to be kind of high turnout competitive districts. And on the other hand, you have these low turnout precincts that you need to pack into safe districts. So there you have low turnout and high probability of winning a district. If you put those together, overall, we have a prediction that there's a negative relationship between the probability that you win a district and the turnout rates of the groups that compose those districts. So that's what we look at in the data. We look not just at districts, but at precinct level information. So we ask, depending on the turnout rate of a precinct, is it systematically assigned to a different type of blue or red leaning district? And the other neat thing that we do is, you know, if you just looked at one map, it would be difficult to say, oh, that precinct is in that district because of gerrymandering, when it could be that there was a river or a town border which implied which district that precinct had to go to, or some other constraint. We look at Democrat and Republican maps and overlay them and focus on the changes between them, where we have examples of both proposals from the two parties in the same state.
And can you also produce some kind of counterfactual here so you can work out whether these efforts to redistrict are actually paying off for the political parties who are trying to push them through?
Yes. So that's another angle to see, are they really taking turnout rates into account when they draw the map? And the way we do that is we say, well, let's focus on a border that they drew and all of the precincts that are adjacent to that border. So if you can think of drawing a map in practice looks like allocating precincts to these districts, then these precincts along the border are the last decisions they had to make. So sort of at the margin, they decided to put this precinct on that side of the border and not the other side. So what we do to construct counterfactuals is we take all those precincts along the border and we scramble them up 1,000 times. So that's 1,000 alternative ways to draw each border. And then we ask first, did they do a good job? So in each simulation, we try to measure what's the probability that they would have won each of those two districts. Mm-hmm. And we see that there's almost never an opportunity for a gerrymanderer to make a large gain by changing that border. So they are actually doing a good job. That's the first thing, which is maybe not so surprising. But next, what we can do is we can say, well, suppose that they were naive about turnout rates. So they actually don't know that some precincts are higher turnout than others. And we repeat the exercise. These turnout rates are important for finding the best way to draw the border, because if you ignored it, you would make a mistake 50% of the time. Mm-hmm. So a mistake here is, oh, I think that I should put a precinct in that district, but actually once you incorporate information about turnout rates, you would expect to lose the district more often. We can actually quantify those types of mistakes, and we see that you really need to pay close attention to turnout rates when you draw a border. And it seems that they're doing that because they're correctly identifying all of the right ways to allocate the precincts at the border.
Wow. Could this create a sort of dishonest, sneaky strategy? I would hate to sully the reputations of our gerrymanderers, where they create proposals that, for anyone who wasn't looking carefully, might seem a fair redistricting effort, but actually they are gerrymandering when we consider the turnout.
Yeah, it does raise questions about whether or not we're doing a good job detecting gerrymandering in practice, mm-hmm. and also evaluating the fairness of maps. So the existing way that we evaluate a map is to say, well, to what extent are they packing and cracking? And there's loads of measures that help you to do that, like how asymmetric is the vote shares in the districts that are won versus lost, so packed versus cracked. Or there's something called the efficiency gap, which is looking at how many votes are wasted here and there disproportionately for one party or the other. But those measures are really designed to measure a pack and crack strategy. And what we conclude from our twist where we incorporate turnout is that on top of those incentives, you might do pack, crack, and you might pack your own voters. And so that's something that could fly under the radar with existing measures.
Except that you're onto them now. Again, this might be a pretty obvious question, but if we wanted to stop gerrymandering happening, what might be the most effective policy to stop it?
Yeah, here's where I wish I had a very obvious answer, actually. I think it's not so obvious. So states have made improvements. You can see, if you think back to this idea that we could simulate lots of maps and compare it to existing ones to see how biased they are. It seems like states that push to use independent commissions or advisory or backup commissions, they tend to draw less biased maps in the most recent redistricting round. Mm-hmm. But there's still lots of controversy about just how independent is an independent commission and how to appoint the map drawers and so on. So it doesn't seem like a total fix. Similarly, you could delegate this to computers. So you could have algorithms to draw maps, but yeah, someone still has to choose the algorithm. And that's a complicated thing. It's not obvious that that's impossible to manipulate as well. Those things seem like clear improvements. When a process like redistricting is so politicized like it is in the US, it doesn't seem like there's an easy fix, even though other nations don't have such a politicized process. It's not clear how to get out of that.
In this polarized, this poisonous political climate that we have sometimes, I guess you really notice what you consider to be gerrymandering when the other side does it. You don't really object quite so much if it favours you. So does this mean that really any meaningful gerrymandering reform is not likely?
There are certainly some headwinds, and it's hard to pick out the next state that will have a big gerrymandering reform, but there are some recent examples in the past. So this cycle, New York had an independent commission involved in the process, mm-hmm. at least. So there are states that have a big enough push from its citizens for redistricting reform. And again, in some cases, it's even bipartisan, but there's no signs of such an easy, quick fix, I would say.
Fascinating. Alison Stashko, gerrymandering detective, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
The paper is called Gerrymandering with Differential Turnout, and the authors are Laurent Bouton, Garance Génicot, Mikhail Castagnera, and Alison Stashko. It is discussion paper 18280 at CEPR.
This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. If you enjoyed this episode, tell the person sitting next to you. And remember to subscribe. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Next week on Vox Talks Economics, how do you design urban traffic regulation?